Welcome to TechNori Live. We're in studio at WGN talking with some of Chicago's top entrepreneurs, founders, and innovators. For those of you tuning in for the first time, what is TechNori? Well, put simply, TechNori is where startups go to showcase. Since 2010, more than 300 companies have been featured by TechNori, and a good lot of them have gone on to raise more than $260 million in venture capital. Visiting us from San Francisco is the keynote for tonight's TechNori Showcase. I'm going to botch her name. She's the co-founder of Women 2.0. She's going to introduce herself much better than I am, but Shaharoz, so far so good. Charania.
Bam.
Boom. I got one. Yes. I probably totally botched and just make me feel good. But regardless, you are here from San Francisco, which I cannot tell you how thrilled I am. The questions that I had for you started off very, very simplistic. It was like, we have an initiative here to really get female founders and women in tech, like, as fully committed and fully emerged in the tech community of Chicago as possible. So I caught on to you thanks to Ken from Republic, and I saw Women 2.0 and I followed it and I started reading everything. I was like, this is fantastic. Then I moved down and I saw your name on Wikipedia. I was like, oh, okay. Click. And I'm like, wow, she's in design. She works with startups. She's an advisor on Republic. She's like all these other things. Like, okay, so now I'm going to talk to her about being an entrepreneur and about women in tech. And then this week happened like 7 days ago, and I was like, I swear when I went through her profile, I thought it said that she was from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Will she be able to be at our showcase?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this conversation started to become like a little bit more real. And now I'm sick of like everything that has come out of Washington, D.C. That said, I'm happy that it happened when it did,
Yeah. Because
we've got you here as someone to speak on behalf of women
Yep. And
women in tech in particular. And he is the Donald, is well known for
DT.
the sort of Donald John Trump. Here's
DJT.
My signature, everyone. Here's my signature on this incredible executive order. We're not political, but I just can't help but make fun of people who act like a stooge. So you are representing women who he offended, and you are also now representing immigrants who he also offended,
mm-hmm.
and you're also representing founders of companies in tech, which he also offended.
Correct.
So that's enough about me. How about you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the fun parts.
So I am all the things that DT don't like, and there's one more lens that I could add, but I don't need to mention that as well. But you can imagine
Yes. Every
lens out there. And to add even one more thing, the design studio I work with has offices in Mexico City. So every part of my life feels very vulnerable right now.
Yeah.
The good news is I'm legal, I'm a green card holder and all the things, but
we're not sure that that's good, like,
agreed.
That's going to work either.
Agreed.
Who knows?
I don't wanna, like, yes, I have not slept for a few days. But I came here 11 years ago, no money, no job, no plan, no visa. Excited about technology. That's what brought me here, the idea that technology could change people's lives. And I made that decision right after graduating university when I felt like Canada was a great place to be. But in 2004, 2005, there wasn't much going on for tech, and it was all in Silicon Valley. And so taking that risk, like many immigrants do,
I was just going to say, and now Canada's standing there saying, I believe we have a big statue somewhere that says, like, give me your poor... Give me something like that. And now Canada is still on the line off of the Statue of Liberty for those who are not well cultured. Now they have our Statue of Liberty.
You're welcome.
And the funny thing is, you mentioned the part where you said, you know, you came here because of what you saw as an opportunity in tech. You had nothing. It was like, we just came here and we're going to do this.
Yep.
That's the same exact story that probably mine and other people's grandparents here had, mm-hmm. and their grandparents and so on, whether it was the gold rush, whether it was industrial revolution and tech and so on. This entire country is built on this.
Yeah.
And yet we're sitting here talking about companies. Later on this week, we'll be airing an interview with the CEO of ShiftGig,
mm-hmm.
who I imagine has a lot of immigrant people that he's brought in to work at his company as they hired. They just raised $20
million. Right.
I'm sure that our next guest on the show as well, Aristotle Loomis, who's been a previous guest a million times, is Greek, and his entire family is Greek. Every company that we've had on here, granted we're tech, seems to be affected significantly
mm-hmm.
by this. And if you ask any economist, they're going to tell you that the future of this economy is tech and it's globalization.
It's trade.
It's trade. So you have to sit there and literally just be like, forget about human rights, which is insane on its own front. it's just foolish, no?
Yeah. I know businesses are going to be affected. I think a lot of us are just sort of unsure what tomorrow will bring. And that is the immigrant mentality, actually. We are all built to brace for change because we come here with nothing. My parents did the same thing. In fact, the first city that my father came to, when my parents are from India and Pakistan, and when my dad first came here, he came to Chicago. He was delivering pizzas. That was his first job. And this idea of displacement.
We have the best pizza, just in case people don't know.
It was Mama's Pizza?
Oh, yeah.
Is that it?
That's still Mama's Pizza. Yeah. Awesome.
So, you know, this idea of being an immigrant in our epigenetics, like, you know, it's deep in our blood to deal with this idea of an unsettled environment because we're all moving from places that are not our own. And so I hope and I see resilience coming forward from many immigrants who are stepping forward and taking a stand or just getting ready to do what they need to do.
You know, the one thing, and I posted, I don't know, it was some ludicrous thing. Everyone's fired. It's fake news, whatever kind of post that I saw. And I wrote above it essentially like, while this sucks and it's not right and all those other things, there's not a better type of person than entrepreneurs to be the ones that are sort of like most affected immediately, because entrepreneurs just by nature like find ways to take advantage of things and sort of make whatever your laws are somewhat obsolete pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And I by no means am telling people to riot and protest. I get protesters, but I'm not a protest person. But I would recommend just do what I do in this case. It's probably not going to work for anyone, but I'm going to do it. Is just do whatever I want. And if you don't like it, like if we all just sort of do what we planned on doing, you can't stop people who can hack you. Like right now he's saying all these things and like he's got his cell phone, he's sitting in the White House, like just tweeting and texting away as if there's not going to be a million hackers sitting there just like ripping his stuff apart. And it's going to be a fun time when it comes out.
Yeah, I feel like right now I've decided that the one thing I need to do is build understanding and empathy, just like we do when we do product design.
Yep.
Who are these people on the other side? So if I am prone to watching NPR or listening to NPR, I really should turn on Fox to better understand. And, you know, while he will do what he needs to do, we need to interact with ourselves on a day-to-day basis. And are we going to approach each other with openness and respect, or are we just going to cut each other off from the beginning? And I think now is a time we need to use openness and thoughtfulness to look beyond him and see what we can do together. Can we all come together the way the protests have?
Yeah, it's a great segue into, like, you, the actual professional here, because it's important, you know, from the political side as well as just, you know, you see all the people defriending on Facebook. I think it's the dumbest thing ever.
Agreed.
It's so stupid. Just listen. Like, the person has a different point of view. Maybe they are educated. Maybe they're not educated. Maybe they're informed. Maybe they're not informed. Like, it doesn't matter. That's their opinion. You would be better served trying to better understand what people like they think so you can better understand why there's this person in the White House or why, you know, how things went this way. You could be a more informed citizen, live a more conscious life, as Sarah Silverman makes famous. So I guess from that standpoint, why I think you are the right person to speak at our event tonight is you are a design thinker sort of by nature.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it about that design thinking nature? And not everyone in tech is. There's coders and things. It's not the same thing. What do you think about that has made you so successful? Or how has it contributed to your career?
Totally. So this idea of design thinking is rooted in the idea of human-centered design. And that sounds like a buzz term, but it really just means understanding people. And ultimately, if you think of just the United States, before 2009, the quote-unquote early adopter in tech was a middle-aged white guy in a hoodie, adopter of the user, right? But since 2009, that gap has completely changed. We have equal numbers of Hispanic, Black, White. Every color is on the internet. Every age is on the internet. Every ability is on the internet. And that's where design thinking is important. Design thinking is not for designers. It's for everyone. It's for founders. It's for creators. It's for executives. It's for anyone who wants to understand the world. And what it does is it helps you open up empathy. It helps you open up understanding. And tools like spending time with your possible consumer by sitting next to them is like one basic thing you can do as a design thinker. And those things that that I'm telling you to do are things that big companies actually make big mistakes on. Company like Snapchat, for example. If they're using design thinking, would they even for a second think that the filter yellow face or the filter black face would be offensive? Of course they would have realized that. I deleted the Snapchat app after they launched those two filters. Yellow face?
It's not ideal.
Makes your eyes small and your skin yellow?
It's not
that's
ideal.
Racist.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
Right? So that is not a design thinker.
Yeah.
Right? That is ignorant.
They have a few other little design thinking snafus.
Plenty. Plenty.
I mean, and I get, like, to them, like, I get to their credit, I get, like, the filter's fun and they just, like, got a little crazy. Even on a business side, they've made some decisions where you're just like, huh. And yeah. They IPO this week, I believe, or so they, right. Until someone buys them in the next day and a half.
Right. But, right. So it's you know, it's always at conflict to me where the world has become increasingly diverse on the internet, on the mobile phone.
And, you know, I've said this to people before, and this is honestly not a soapbox or a rally about anything, to be totally honest. It's just do you want to be successful in life? That's the question. I don't care about your personal, like, at home, you shut your door and you're a racist, like, that's your own problem. Like, whatever, man. But if you want to be successful, you want to include the thoughts and the experiences of everyone around you. Mm-hmm. Female, male, gay, straight, black, white, doesn't, like, if I don't understand the thought process behind excluding people and removing them from an equation, because you can't, it's like the, I don't remember the adage exactly, but it's essentially like the tidal wave. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't stop the tidal wave. You're going with it. So why fight it?
And the reality is there's an ROI when you are inclusive. You have more users. You have more loyalty, brand loyalty, when you feel that you are understood. See, well, look at the move that Lyft made this weekend.
Yep.
They donated $1 million to the ACLU, and now they have more downloads than Uber.
Uber has more deletes than they've ever had before. Lyft is going through the roof, and Uber, on top of it, has doubled the one. They spent donated $3 million to counter it, and that was just like, wow,
too late,
buddy. So it cost them $3 million, lost a ton of users. Uber or Lyft got the big lift that they needed.
Absolutely. And that is design thinking.
Yeah.
Understanding your user, that your drivers are diverse, that your drivers are diverse in race, in ethnicity, in gender. And if you're going to protect them, you have to show that in moves beyond your product.
I'm going to be a hypocrite, though, because in one area, I'm joking, sort of. I think older people shouldn't be allowed on the internet because they slow it down. I'm telling you, I live in a building full of older people, and I think that they open up like 20 tabs and leave it open.
Yeah,
and
I do that.
Well, yeah, but you use them. You're like running and using them. I swear, they just like go on. It's like, oh. So old people are banned from the internet.
Trump's people
are banned from the internet. I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding. I'm just, old people in my building are banned from using the internet. But
your building is interesting.
It's a very interesting. It's not very. It's quiet. Mm. People have dinner about 3:30, and then, you know, they're asleep by 7. It's perfect. No, but you have made many great points, which I'm sure you will illustrate even better and more on tonight.
Yep.
At Chase Auditorium. From a professional side, there is one more thing I want to get into, and it's obviously a big thing, is females in tech. You came in at a time, 2006 is when you co-founded Women 2.0, where I would say argue still, and it's not much of an argument, still in Silicon Valley, there is this thing where female founders are not getting funded, and we have essentially, since the minute I took over Technori, was to drive home the point that female companies can be and are incredible, and that they should have every opportunity to raise funds the same as minorities, and therefore all of our showcases are 50% represented by females.
Awesome.
When I saw what you guys were doing, it was like, what do I have to do to get you here? So talk a little bit more about your experience first, I think, coming into a world and recognizing the need for Women 2.0 and then building it and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so when I arrived in Silicon Valley, sort of, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed in 2006. It didn't dawn on me for a while until I realized, until someone said it to me, that, you know, you're always the only girl in the room. So in meetings, at networking events, social events, it was just a predominant thing. And it was like, wait a second, you're right. And how does that even make sense if half the people using our products are going to be women? How does it make sense when, you know, the other side of the world, in India and Africa, entrepreneurs are 98 to 99% of entrepreneurs that are getting microloans to start companies are women. But here in the most innovative city in the world, less than 10% of women get funding. It made no sense to me, right? And ultimately, why? Why would we not have more people innovating? And so starting it was, it felt like I had a full-time job. I was working at a startup as a, you know, the only girl in the room and as a product manager. And we started to do things once a month in our own apartments. We brought people together. And our premise was, 10 years ago, it was too early to talk about diversity and hiring. Nobody wanted to have that conversation, we had to make it relevant. And to make it relevant meant building community. And we built community by having monthly events, literally first in our apartments, then eventually we graduated to startup offices.
Sounds like a familiar history, I should say.
It was building a movement and making the conversation not an attack, but one of understanding. One where men would come to our events so they could see and feel what it was like to be in a room full of women. And when they would leave the event, they're like, oh, now I know what you feel like every day.
Yep.
And that building that understanding is what led to people realizing, okay, there's an ROI from here. I should consider hiring. And so we started really with events, moved into content. Our whole thing was content, community, and conferences. And that was really to inspire people and to educate people to be entrepreneurs. And to us, having people as founders was the only way to change the culture of tech. If you said, oh, you should hire someone, that wasn't going to work. The culture was already set. It was already a beer pong culture. Yeah. It was too late, yeah. Right? But if you started a company with a female and a male at the same time, the culture evolves over time to be different. And so for us, we knew it was making sure that the founders were a mix of men and women.
So the history of how that was is very parallel to what we tried to do here at Technori over since 2010, building a movement around Chicago tech, because we didn't have that same thing. At this stage, obviously the ecosystem is much stronger and there that it wasn't there before. But on the female side of things, I think that very similar to what you are talking about, but the trouble that we had, or have, I should say, is that I think it's not education, because plenty of female coders around the world, but there's a feeling, I think, in colleges and high schools in particular, which is where I'm moving my focus. We start our focus by saying, listen, from now on, this is last year, from now on, female representation 50%, minority 30% representation, that's our goal every time. We're not going to bend the rules to make it happen, but that's our goal every time.
We work harder to find them.
Yeah, well, yeah,
they're
we
not
have to
visible.
Work, well, we work harder to find them, and we talk to groups like you and start expanding out of just Chicago and bringing companies from all over mm-hmm. in. But the next thing is like, all right, well, to your point, where do you find them? I think that you need to get them out of the shell a little bit, and this is both minority and female. And I think it starts in high school. And I think going to the high schools, we're going to be working with K-Cura to start getting our messaging into CPS mm-hmm. and say, hey, you're not. It's cool to be a nerd. Mm-hmm. Smart is the new sexy. Mm-hmm. Like, come on out and work and go to these coding camps, and whether that has an impact on, the family and things like that would be obviously doubly beneficial. Yep. But from my standpoint, if we can get them out and get them involved now, we will have to do almost no searching in a couple of years.
That's
which is
the right approach, right? Because that's going further down the pipeline, right?
I'm using design thinking. That's
thank
the,
you.
I'm
trying you to, understand your user so well.
I'm trying to figure it out. I don't know if I understand.
You know,
I don't understand
it,
anybody.
It's always about the alternative approach as well, right? The obvious thing you say, oh, tell Google and tell Facebook to hire more women. No, process, right? That takes time. But going further down the chain where there is a need and there is an opportunity makes sense. Just like with us, we said founders, not companies.
Yep.
And just like when you're going to have Ken here, like one of the founders that raised on Republic is Eve Peters. She has a startup that is a dating app.
And
I saw her this weekend and she was like, I want to do another raise on Republic because I don't have to put up with going to a meeting that's full of men and people asking me why I'm single running a dating app and what it really means to run a dating app.
They asked on Shark Tank, all the dating apps. They've asked the three of them. They've asked all three of them, did you find your spouse?
Yeah.
On dating app
and
or boyfriend.
Like, it's insane, yeah. Right? Like if you were a guy, by the way, I'm pretty sure the founder of Tinder was not has not been in a relationship himself.
I'm sure.
And so no one asks him that.
Can't stop swiping. It's a problem.
Anyway, whole other discussion. He's not my kind of people. But, ultimately, what's the alternative route? And she said, I want to raise more equity crowdfunding because it's open to me.
Yep.
So wherever you can find those gaps, that's truly design thinking.
Well, we'll tie the loop out here then, I guess, because that is why you're also an advisor at Republic, and
yes.
We'll be talking to Ken about that, and that's a show that'll be also coming out this week. But the main thing of why I chose Republic to partner with and why I thought this was the right fit was because everyone else I talked to, and I'm sure you did your research before joining Republic, everyone else that I talked to had this sort of, I don't want to say like old-fashioned thinking, but they've got this brand-new rule, brand-new tool, and they're going to use it the way you would have used it before Kickstarter. It made no sense to me. When you look at female and minority founders, first-time founders, it's not limited to color and to sex. First-time founders, any kind of person who has no experience or just has a lot of experience and doesn't want to go the traditional route, you can do your friends and family this way.
Exactly.
And utilize this massive network instead of leveraging just one person there's just so you can do whatever you want with it, and you control the terms. It's a convertible note, essentially. Like, you know, I don't understand the people who are baffled by this tool.
No, and I think the other layer of benefits that equity crowdfunding offers is it's this new wave where users are in charge. The users can now invest.
Yep.
And feel like they're a part of the journey.
I'm stealing it from Ken. Democratization of investing.
Yeah, man. That's it.
Absolutely. This has been awesome. Good. I think that people should come tonight.
Yeah.
6 p.m. is the actual networking portion. 7 p.m. you'll take the stage about 7:15.
Yep.
And people can hear you give your presentation live and meet you. And I think that everyone listening to this should absolutely show up. There's actually not that many tickets left. I think as of right now, last time I checked, we had 475 tickets sold.
Oh, my God.
The seating only holds 550. So I haven't checked in like a half an hour. So maybe we're there. So hopefully get your tickets before this will be airing shortly. So get your tickets soon and come see Shaharoz?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Awesome.
I look forward to seeing you all.
Very cool. And then people can follow you at Shaharoz on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll see you tonight.
Thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much. You can stream this episode and more on technori.com, and you can stay up to date with our Technori news feed and other tech bites by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.